Well, hello everyone and welcome back. Today is Friday, September 7th, 2012. My name is Angela Walton-Raji and this is the African Roots Podcast. Remember, you can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. Well, how's everybody doing today? Hope you've had a good week. I hope that the beginning of the week was very pleasant for you. It was the Labor Day weekend, and hope that many of you had a chance to spend some really good time with family and friends. That's sort of the last holiday before we get into really the fall and the cooler weather as well. But things are going on that also the fall launches. We know school has started everywhere, literally, but fall also launches a real interesting season in terms of events, workshops, conferences that are going on, some one-day workshops, some two or three-day events coming up. And I have a few things that I will share with you. Well, there's an event coming up next Saturday. This event is going to be in Wilmington, Delaware. It's called Telling Your African American Family Story, an Introductory Genealogy Workshop. This program begins at 10 and will end at 3:30 p.m. And it's being sponsored or hosted by the Delaware Historical Society, and I'm putting some contact information for you. But it looks like it's going to be an interesting program. There's going to be an introduction to African American genealogy by Shamel Jordan. Many people are familiar with her in the Mid-Atlantic states. A look at Wilmington, Delaware's East Side through the 1940 census. Syl Wolford, who is a Delaware African-American historian and genealogist, is going to be presenting that session. Another session on what one can learn from family photographs and documents. Jim Jones, who's going to be discussing photography. And Constance J. Cooper, who's chief curator of the Delaware Historical Society, is going to be presenting an introduction to Delaware Historical Society Research Library. So it's a full day of things, and I'm putting information for you, contact information with both email and phone information. So if you are in that area, if you're in the Delmarva region, and that means, for those of you who don't know, Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia. There's a place along the coast where those three states are near each other. If you're in the area and Wilmington is not too far, you may want to go and check it out. Coming up also the following day in Virginia, in Yorktown, Virginia, and I'm glad to see that people are addressing this subject, partly because it interests me as well. But in Virginia, in Yorktown, there's going to be a presentation by Russell Hobson, who's going to discuss the Union Army census of the colored population of York County, Virginia. The census was done in March of 1865. This is really rare. I'm excited to even hear about such a thing that was done. Of course, it makes me ask the question, were there other such census counts taken in other places where Union armies occupied various communities? Maybe no, maybe yes. Something for someone to start to research. However, what Mr. Hobson is going to be discussing, and this is what's close to me and close to my heart as well, he's going to be telling stories of some of the contraband families as they begin new chapters in their lives after the Civil War. You know, I have a presentation that I have given in many seminars in the last year in terms of looking at those first days of freedom, looking at how freedom came to your family. Many of us know, we know our ancestors are in the census records as we go back. We see them in the 1900s. We start to get into the 1800s and see them in 1880. We see them in 1870, just 5 years after many had found freedom. We know we don't see them in 1860. And then we stop and we just say, well, they were slaves. Hold it. Wait a minute. You find them in 1870. You don't find them in 1860. There's a story that's missing. we know that some of the stories are not known. That story that's missing is, how did freedom come? How did it affect your family? Do you really think that former slaveholders got the word, okay, slaves are now to be released from bondage? The 13th Amendment has passed, and slaveholders said, okay, we're putting you on the payroll tomorrow. You know, it wasn't quite that smooth. In fact, it was nothing like that. Keep in mind, a war was fought over many issues, including the enslavement of people. Well, this is sometimes the story that can be found among the stories of the contrabands. So I'm so thrilled, and I hope that if I have a chance to hear Mr. Hobson anytime within the near future, I hope to go and listen to him, because the stories of freedom come from the stories of the contrabands. These were the men, women, and even children, and also elders, who literally freed themselves. It was a turbulent time. It was war. It was chaos. And in the midst of it, people said, I'm gone. I am no longer going to remain enslaved. And their courage, their resistance, their resilience is sometimes not told. I'm thrilled to hear that this is going to take place. As I said, it's next Sunday, September 16th, 3 o'clock p.m. in Yorktown, Virginia. I'll put some information for you for that event coming up as well. By the way, since you know, I do talk about Civil War. I have to. It was such an important time in our lives, and it's a time in our life that we should really not just commemorate the courage and what happened, but also begin to appreciate the impact that it had, because hundreds of thousands of people had their lives altered forever through the subsequent freedom that was found. Well, there's going to be a proclamation gala in Washington, D.C. at the African American Civil War Museum. That's going to take place September 19th, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. This is the celebration of the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation, and this is going to unfold with the African American Civil War Museum's Proclamation Gala. This is also a fundraising event that supports the mission of the museum, which is to preserve and tell the stories of the United States Colored Troops and African American involvement in the Civil War. I am putting some contact information for you on the podcast website, where you can find information on how to obtain tickets to that event. By the way, we know October approaches. However, a moment of shameless self-promotion. I'm also going to be traveling next week. I'm going to New York, and I am looking forward to speaking at the National Museum of the American Indian, which is the New York, I guess I would call it a satellite museum. It is a Smithsonian institution in New York City, and I'm going to be giving a presentation on researching blended families, finding African American and Native American families. This will take place at 6 p.m. on the 13th of September. That is this coming Thursday evening. Okay, now back to October. You know, October is busy. Chicago Society, Chicago African American Genealogical and Historical Society, is holding its annual conference. I'm excited because I'm going to be speaking there, and that's always a fun group to spend some time with. We also know that after that, the annual conference of the Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society, this is a national conference, they are hosting their annual conference in Greensboro, North Carolina. And we know that after that, there is the International Black Genealogy Summit in Salt Lake City. These events have been well publicized, and we know that they are coming. But there's some other things that are going on in October as well, and I'm happy to share at least one or two of them with you. One really caught my attention, and I was really excited to see that it's a conference taking place in the Midwest. This is taking place in Indiana, and it's called A Progressive Journey Through Indiana History. This event is sponsored by the Southern Indiana Minority Initiative of Jeffersonville. This group is also working towards establishing, I guess it's like a heritage trail, and it's going to, this trail will work its way throughout the state of Indiana, and it's going to be following the history of Indianans, or I guess the term is Hoosiers that's used in Indiana, but it's going to trace the trail of African Americans in the state, in addition to the fact, because it is being sponsored by the Southern Indiana Minority Initiative, the purpose is also to foster minority entrepreneurship. Well, what is kind of fascinating, I guess, about it, because, you know, we don't often hear the stories of African Americans. There was a gentleman I remember several years ago I met at an Ox conference. I think he is now deceased. Mr. Robbins, Coy Robbins, had written a book called Black Hoosiers, and he had looked at the history of many African Americans who had lived in the state, certainly some before emancipation. And even though Indiana was not are considered, I suppose, a slave state, it was a slave that it was a state rather that tolerated enslavement, and so it's a kind of interesting history. Well, as I was looking at the story of what and the areas of focus of this particular conference in Indiana, well, there was a story that came out that I had never heard of, and it was actually the story of a woman, well, two women, really. One woman, though, however, who was enslaved. And in the early, and I emphasize the word early, 19th century, this woman who was a slave filed a lawsuit. Well, actually, this woman had, by this time, she had been enslaved, but she had somehow found her freedom. I don't know if she was manumitted by a former owner, and when you hear part of the story, that might not be the case. Her own freedom may have come through some other method. I don't know those details. However, her name was Elizabeth, and she filed a lawsuit. She sued a white man who was said to have been her former owner for assault and for false imprisonment. And what's amazing in this story was that, considering the times, we're talking early 19th century, we're talking 1814, she won her case. This is something not very well known. She lived in Bullitt County, Indiana, and just the fact that 12 white males ruled in her favor and gave her a small monetary award, which was less than $20, but considering this early 19th century, that may have been a considerable sum. However, her story being so unique, a conference is being developed around this theme of this woman and her courage to confront the man that she said assaulted her and imprisoned her falsely. And it's quite, quite fascinating. Well, as I said, it's also a story of a second woman. And the second woman is preservationist Maxine Brown, who was a woman to whom the story of Elizabeth came. She was, actually there was another lady who was doing some research who stumbled upon, this research was in Harrison County, Indiana, who stumbled upon the story of Elizabeth and passed the story of Elizabeth, the formerly enslaved woman, to Maxine Brown. Ms. Brown was so captivated by Elizabeth's story, she began her own personal quest to learn more. The story is a complicated one, and as I said, it's also complicated by the fact that Indiana was not a slave state. Officially, it was outlawed, but it tolerated it quite well and allowed people to be enslaved to be there. Well, it's not exactly I'll just say clear what all of the pertinent details are. But the conference that I just mentioned is focused around this theme, and it's going to provide historical information, some of which is still being uncovered, some of which has recently been uncovered. And it's also providing a broader context to explore race relations and a number of other things. I'm going to put some detail for you there and a link to the site that will allow you to explore what's going on. And this is at the Southern Indiana Minority Enterprise Initiative. And it just looks so very different and so unique. You know, one of the things that I do, I teach a class once a month, and it's a genealogy class. We have a lot of open discussions and a number of things. Well, one of the things that I pointed out, and it became an interesting discussion yesterday, was that we have two projects that we're always working on at any one time. And you may be working on a project on your family history. You're looking for Uncle Henry Jenkins, and you're following that line of Henry Jenkins, and that's what you want to find and tell that story. And there's still another story that you're going to emerge with. You're going to find details with careful research and using standard methodologies. However, the other part of the story is your research journey. The details of the lives of Uncle Henry or Great Grandma Jenkins, yes, that is what you seek. But what you also come back with is the other story. And sometimes the other story, I'm talking about your personal research journey. That's the other story. Sometimes it is that journey that can take you down unexpected roads. Unexpected roads that can lead you to amazing places. As we look at the story coming out of Indiana with Elizabeth suing this man who assaulted her, who falsely imprisoned her, that's a unique story. And Ms. Brown, who is involved with this conference and so immersed in the story of Elizabeth, she's not related to Elizabeth, but she is so intrigued by telling the story. And hopefully we as researchers can appreciate the value of telling that story. And there's so many resources that are there to help us, including archives, different libraries. Speaking of archives, I hope you had a chance to listen to archivist and historian and researcher Linda McDowell last night on Bernice Bennett's show. This woman talked about the wonderful resources in the state of Arkansas. Her experience as a researcher is known in the state of Arkansas. She has worked at both the Butler Center, which is part of the Central Arkansas Library System, as well as the fact that she's also worked in the Arkansas History Commission as well. And her breadth of knowledge is quite wide. And it's this kind of information, this kind of resource that you can get to those other details that tell you those stories. And it's so very, very important that you listen to what those archivists have to tell you about their holdings. You talk to those librarians. I appreciated just hearing things and hearing different types, her knowledge of other library holdings beyond the ones where she has worked was extensive. And, you know, these are the kinds of things that are important. Of course, this is the kind of great guest that you get to hear on Bernice's show all the time. But it's one of those things that I hope that you will have a chance to pay attention. Take some notes when you have an archivist speaking about their holdings. If you have a remote interest in that state, tune in by all means. By the way, another notation about Bernice's show, don't forget to tune in next week. National President of the Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society, Ms. Tamla Tenpenny Lewis, will be her guest. That should be quite exciting. I've heard Tamla speak on more than one occasion, and oh my goodness, she has some presentations that can many times just leave you quite moved. lead you to thinking about things that you maybe have put off in your own life and your own family planning. And I'll just say tune and listen, because she's certainly going to be a wonderful guest as well. But, you know, I guess I appreciate so many things. Listening to Linda last night and appreciating where she works, appreciating the other facilities that are there and the other holdings that come from sites. And of course, I am so thrilled to see that more and more and more facilities are digitizing collections. I also appreciate the fact that sometimes those local heroes, those local unknown heroes that we sometimes talk about or sometimes don't talk about outside of the local community, they're getting a wider recognition. And what I mean specifically by a wider recognition, I'm excited when I stumble upon someone and I do a little research, because sometimes we have to follow those little distractions. And in the last year, I've had two such distractions. You've heard me talk about, or maybe you haven't heard me talk about the story and the journey I experienced with researching Martha Hockenhull. And if not, I'll put a link for you to my blog where I talked about that research journey. I had a second experience this past year researching a gentleman with an odd name, whose name was Spotswood Rice. This man who has just an incredible history out of St. Louis. Some people know Spotswood Rice as a man who wrote this fiery letter to a woman who had enslaved his family. And he certainly should be known for the author of that letter. I also know this man as a Civil War soldier. I also know this man as a very, very innovative man and a very strong leader in the AME church. And I'm not related to him. Understand that. But again, this is one of those research journeys, one of those stories that stood up and grabbed my attention, and it needed to be told. It needed to be told. Well, speaking with people, the man came out of Missouri. I have shared the story with several people. I've also put it on my Civil War blog, and a very extensive and very skilled researcher in St. Louis shared an article with me out of a newspaper written an article about 7 years ago that someone had found a descendant of Spotswood Rice, and they were sharing his story about the famous letter that he wrote to the slaveholding woman demanding the release of his children. Well, I was excited to see that, and I realized, you know, there's so many stories that have to be told for so many reasons, particularly because the woman who's a descendant of this man did not know his remarkable history. She thought maybe she could get to World War II and possibly World War I with her history. Never knew this amazing history of her family. Well, I was excited to see that article that was shared with me. Thank you, Jim Vincent, out of St. Louis. I was so, so thrilled to read the article. But also, I got an impression that there's still other parts of the story that even the individual who shared the story with the descendants didn't even share some of the pieces that I have found. And my point is that, you know, sometimes we go down these journeys for unknown reasons, reasons unknown to us. And I guess for me, here's a man whom I'm hoping St. Louis will start to celebrate this man, but for several reasons. I'm realizing a part of St. Louis's history that I never knew, and I went to college. My first degree was earned in St. Louis. Well, I'm realizing that here was a man, not just a man who was a Civil War soldier, a man who had a strong sense of family, but here was a man who was also part of a network of individuals who were inspired by Father Moses Dixon. Certainly people who know Moses Dixon are aware of the many things that he did, from the Knights of Liberty to the AME Church to the Knights and Daughters of Tabor and so much more. Well, I guess what is opening up for me is another realization that, you know, there's an interconnectedness that sometimes we don't know that we're part of. And sometimes it's wise for us to stop and back up and look around. See who else is in the neighborhood, not just who's in the neighborhood on the census page, not just who's in the neighborhood in terms of in our immediate circles in which we operate, but also who else is in the research neighborhood, who else is in the same academic arena, pursuing the same individuals, telling part of the same person's story. Because at some point, it might be possible to merge some elements of those stories to put them together and get a greater story. I'm finding such an amazing history when I look at St. Louis, a city that I never knew when I was an undergraduate. It was just a big city to me, and I was from a small town in Arkansas, and I'd never realized the richness of this history and the network of individuals who were fighters for their freedom. There's, yes, the rich Dred Scott history, but the Civil War history, what was going on at Benton Barracks, what was going on, and how many people you see the evidence of their involvement at Jefferson Barracks. And amazing, amazing, amazing. And these are sort of the things that we do. You know, as I pointed out, a lady in the class that I teach yesterday asked an amazing question. She was a little bit frustrated. One of her ancestors, she had learned, had been raised by another family, had been sort of adopted, probably not an official adoption. And she was frustrated that she didn't know what else to do to get further documentation. And I pointed out to her that just because the lineage perhaps has hit a wall where it's not exactly known who were the biological parents of this grandmother or this great-grandmother, who they were, the story is still there. The story of this child, for whatever reason, being parentless and now being raised by another family, that story, the story of the family that embraced her, the story of her coming to terms with her own unique history, the story of the community that probably knew of her abandonment as a child. She had other records showing the baptismal records. She saw other records that were showing the immersion of this child in the family. That's part of the story to tell. And we're doing more than just collecting names and putting them on a chart and seeing how far back that one line can go. We're telling a story. And this is the greater lesson. The greater lesson for us as we're dealing with the brick wall, as we're dealing with the Spotswood Rice characters that we come across, or the Martha Hockenhull characters that we encounter in our research, the people who are unique. Wow, they're popping up and you see their name and you realize you've got to research them, whether they're related to you or not. There's a reason for that, because we do have to pause and sometimes tell another story outside of our family circle that's going to help us understand and interpret our own family story much better. I mentioned the contrabands, the discussion and the presentation about lives of the contrabands in Yorktown, Virginia. How exciting that story is going to be told. Because again, the story that you may say, well, hey, my folks are from the Carolinas, they're not from Virginia, or my people are from Arkansas or the Mississippi Delta, they're not from Virginia. But trust me, the institution was so widespread, there was scenario after scenario after scenario of contraband stories emerging in multiple states with multiple circumstances, multiple problems, multiple issues, people, refugeed slaves seeking shelter, having concerns. There were health epidemics, measles, cholera, yellow fever breaking out in some of these contraband camps. How were the children going to fare? How were the children going to learn? Where were the first schools established for them? Story after story after story. So sometimes by telling the greater story, we learn the smaller story. Well, That's it for this week. I have run on and on and on, and it's time for me to wrap it up for another week. But you know, I appreciate you for being there. Without you, there would not be an African Roots podcast, and I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen. In the meantime, you know, there's so many things out there to keep us going, and my goal or my hope is that you keep your eyes focused, keep your eyes ahead, keep your eyes in the direction where you want them to be. Yes, they're distractions. Some of the distractions are noteworthy when we go after notable people who appear in our line of vision. But the most important thing is to do what you do. And yep, you know what that is. To keep researching, keep documenting, and yes, always keep sharing what you find. Listen, everyone, have a wonderful weekend. Have a great week of research. And be well and be safe. I'll talk to you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.